Blog Talk Radio.
There it is. It's another bad hair day. Here's the theme music. And here's Marshall.
Hey, hey, everybody. I'm
hey,
here.
There. How's the hair?
Well, I'm wearing a hat tonight, I gotta admit, but I'll take it off.
You don't have to. I would be the last person to tell a man to take his hat off. You know, a good hat is a pretty nice thing, you know.
It's true. How's your hair doing, Dave?
Well, I ain't wearing a hat. I took a shower today, so my hair is actually pretty neat and well-groomed, well-combed. I had a haircut not too long ago, so it's not even very disheveled. And I kind of have a nice tan, so, you know, I'm doing all right.
There you go.
You know, but
I must confess, I'm completely disheveled as I was right? I was up all hours of the night last night.
I know, and I want to ask you about that. What were you doing last night? Something geeky, probably.
Oh, I don't know. It's all relative. I started out, the bulk of my night was spent watching the last several episodes of The Sopranos, the grand finale. But then my dog escaped, jumped through a screen window after a raccoon at about 3 in the morning, so there was that,
pretty
too.
Funny. Well, what did you think? I mean, the very last episode of the last Sopranos, where they end with that very controversial scene?
I thought it was fantastic.
Really? Yes. What did you like about it?
Well, I thought it was very emotive. I thought it was real effective. I thought it was real thought-provoking. And I thought it was cool. It was more interesting than a more predictable ending where one or more people got shot. Instead, my take on it was that it was a demonstration of the sense of paranoia and tension and fear that was a constant of that mafia lifestyle, and the finale of the series really brought the viewer to that same emotional place that the characters live in.
So sort of like whether he got killed or not. If he didn't get killed, he's going to be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life, basically.
Yep. I think that the way that the viewers felt in those last few minutes, especially, or the last few episodes, was the way that he probably felt all the time.
Yeah, interesting. I remember, you know, because I saw it when it was aired. It was probably 2 years ago or something, and I was kind of disappointed. But it aged pretty well, you know, over time. Sort of like, had it been resolved, you know, that Tony got killed, or had it been resolved that he did not get killed one way or another, probably wouldn't have been as interesting. So I panned it when it, you know, I wrote a review about it when it, you know, was on. I said, this is a cop-out. You know, we paid good money, and we deserve a, you know, an ending. But, you know, whatever. But I think it's nice that you were doing something non-geeky. I think that's great. You know, we were having a heat wave here, and so you know, I went to sleep early because it was so hot, and then woke up at about 2 a.m. and I shipped the product, so that was pretty exciting.
You sure did, yeah. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's a kind of a nice place. I think it pretty much works. I've had some people. It was called River 2, and it's a complete rewrite of my. You know, the last RSS reader that I did, I started in 1999, and the code was sort of a continuum from then till, I guess, like June of this year. And at that point, I had so many different aggregators. I had spent the last year or so writing a variety of different custom aggregators. I decided to sort of break out of the, break out of that sort of framework of the Userland aggregator, and just see what it would be like to write one from scratch in, you know, this time frame. And I found that it was pretty easy. What had been hard before actually now had gotten pretty easy. And so then after having scattered these things all over the place, I decided let's try to reunify everything. And I had that project pretty well underway when I decided to reboot RSS Cloud, and then I needed an aggregator that would support RSS Cloud so that we'd have something to, you know, to read the cloud-enabled feeds when millions of them come out. We need to have something that can read them. So that's what River 2 is the first of those, and I think there'll be quite a few others. So
that's I suspect so too.
Yeah.
So that product has support for RSS Cloud. So when feeds publishing using RSS Cloud update, this reader will receive the update immediately, automatically.
Well, with the caveat that you have only if you're like network accessible. If you're not, if you're behind a firewall or not, no. But if you're out on the net, yes.
And then it's got support for dynamic OPML subscription. So you can subscribe to someone's reading list by URL, and then as they change that collection of feeds, your subscriptions will change as well, right?
Right, yeah. That's an important idea, I think, that that sort of enables experts to provide packages of feeds for people and keep them updated, sort of like mutual funds of feeds is the way I think of it. And it's funny because it's Jay Rosen, who I do the Rebooting the News podcast with, has more or less invented this on his own from the user standpoint. You know, I come at it from the standpoint of a computer scientist, and I think, you know, well, this is an obvious next step, right? But Jay thinks about it from the standpoint of a journalism professor who wants to give people good sort of signposts for here, this is what you should follow if you want to be a well-rounded follower of new journalism. So. It's another one of those bootstrap things that somebody has to go first so that the art can start to develop, and then once that happens, I think you'll see other aggregators support it. And then
I hope so.
There's the podcatcher too.
How does that work?
Well, it's a if you subscribe to a feed that has enclosures, then it notes them, puts them in a queue, and then one at a time it downloads them and puts them in a folder on your local hard drive, and there's a separate page for podcasts, and so you can see what it's downloaded and what it's pending to download, and then from there, if it's already been downloaded, then its icon changes from an MP3 player to a folder, and you click on the folder, and it opens up the folder, and you can then copy the file wherever you need to copy it. So it's
cool.
I wanted to, I wanted Google Reader to have some competition, and I wanted iTunes to have some competition too. And so that's why I went in these two different directions. And then I'm aware there's, you're in this situation where once you get a project like this started, then other people sort of come forward and say, well, I can tell you about what I'm doing, but you can't tell anybody else. So I'm kind of aware of some projects that will dovetail nicely to what I'm doing here. Once they ship, I need to ship first, though. And it's conceivable that a couple of those will be announced at the RSS Cloud Meetup. We're doing another one, only this one is on the West Coast in Berkeley. The one we did before was in New York. And so this is now, I guess, about 2 months later. And quite a bit of progress, I think. So.
Cool. Can I make a feature request?
Sure.
This is terrible. You just announced the shipping of the product already. Here I am. Well, the dynamic OPML subscription is real interesting to me, but when I read about it, I got a little worried, and I thought it sure would be nice if when an OPML file that I'm subscribed to loses a feed, when a feed is deleted from it, if I had the option to retain it personally, if I was prompted to.
I see. So, in other words, you like it. I understand. You like it. You would normally be unsubscribed from it, but because you like it so much, you don't want to be. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. Yep. Jay Rosen suggested it at one point. Then, at a later point, it was no longer in his list of suggested readings. His OPML file,
but you liked it, yeah.
Want to
keep
it.
Well, how would you? You see, the problem with features like that, I mean, it sort of is understandable, but then you start thinking, okay, I got to design a user interface for this, right? And how would that work? I mean, this is all happening at a time. I sort of hate products that sort of stop you and say, you're in the middle of doing this, but now you have to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And especially when the dialogue is going to be kind of spooky. Think about what the dialogue would say. What would the dialogue say? It'd say, this feed, you may want to keep this feed, but this jerk over here decided you shouldn't have it anymore.
Yep.
No, I don't think I would do it that way. I think I would do it a different way. I think I would... Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
It reminds me of something that Nicole Simon asked Mark Fletcher, the creator of Bloglines, about years ago on a podcast, where she requested that feeds that she was subscribed to but hadn't read for, say, 3 or 6 months, she was given the opportunity to unsubscribe from...
I mean, that would happen automatically.
Not necessarily, but it would be drawn to your attention. You know,
but how you see the drawing to your attention thing is the problem. I mean,
is it?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of interruptions when you're using a computer, you know, especially like a Macintosh. It's all Windows too. I mean, it's just always got an opinion about something. You know, you need to plug your computer in because the battery's going low. You're running low on disk space. Here's a piece of software that wants you to update it. Firefox thinks you should go to version 3.5. You know, I mean, it's like all these things, and oftentimes the things they ask you to do happen, and they break your train of thought. I mean, it's sort of like you think, well, what kind of a jerk would interrupt me when I'm doing this very important work with a stupid question like that? See, I always try to finesse it so that it doesn't have to be that way, you know? First of all, one thing I would – let me just turn around and give you a suggestion and see if this answers the need. How about a preference that says don't unfollow these things when the feed says to unfollow it?
That would be great.
That would do it for you, huh? Because, you know, that's super easy. And it's proactive.
Yeah.
It allows you to – although, you see, it kind of takes out all the fun of reading lists then. Another possibility – let me throw this one out at you. So I mark the feeds that come from a reading list in some special way, like put a little icon next to it that says this is from a reading list, right? And give you a gesture that allows you to turn that off and say, nope, this no longer comes from a reading list. This is my feed, and I keep it when he unfollows it, or if they unfollow it.
Mm-hmm. I like both of those suggestions. You know what might be a deal in my mind would be a special little page that I could go to when the spirit moved me that notified me. These 5 or 10 feeds you used to be subscribed to through a reading list.
Oh,
you may have noticed they're no longer present.
I already have got that one. That's called the log page, and that's a product like an aggregator needs a log page because basically it's always doing all these things in the background. I mean, that's the whole point of it. It's just going out and checking feeds and seeing if it's got something new, or downloading a podcast, or renewing a subscription to a feed because it's in the cloud and you have to do that every 24 hours. I don't want to bother you with all that stuff. I'm not going to tell you about it. But I enter a record in the log every time I do one of those, and the log is one of the top-level commands. You just go there. You can see what's been going on. And when you unsubscribe from a feed, whether it be automatic because it's a reading list or when you do it interactively, that goes in the log. And resubscribing to it is 2 mouse clicks. I can make it 1 mouse click.
Well, it would be great if that was pulled out of the log and put into a special place.
Nah. The log is
no?
a special place. I want to... No, because if you have 2 special places, then I got to tell you, well, go here when this happens, and go here when you feel like this, and go here when you feel like that. I can't. 2 is 1 too many. 1 is the right number in that situation. How would you know? Again, how do you describe that? I mean, you know,
I'm
what,
a big believer in prioritizing streams in the river of news.
But this isn't the river of news. This is
The river of news about your river of news.
That's correct.
It's your,
and how many of those rivers do you want? Yes, exactly right. It is the river of news about your river of news. It's a meta
and
river of news.
Just like I'd like to segment my river of news for strategic use, so too would I like to segment my river of news about my river of news.
I'll make a deal.
You know,
I'll make a deal with you, okay? If you use the product, okay, and you use it for a week, and then we'll talk about it and you tell me what you want.
Okay. Okay. That's a good deal.
I understand that first-time users have legitimate concerns and needs, and I think that I've listened to those, okay, here. Then if you want to, like, co-design this with me, then you need to have a little bit more background. And or you don't need to. I mean, it just would be more useful to me if you did.
Yeah. I think. Oh, that's very fair.
Is it?
Very
good.
Fair.
See, because I try to be fair, you know. I mean.
You're going to have some competition, though.
Really?
Because, it's going to be very.
See, I'm one of those weird guys that thinks competition is a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's true. Well, it's going to be hard to tear me away from my new favorite RSS reader.
Let me guess.
Beaver.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. You were going to guess.
Well, I was going to guess wrong. What is it?
It's called Fever.
Fever?
Fever.
Spell that.
Yep. F-E-V-E-R. Just like.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I've never heard Fever. Oh, like Fever, like I'm running a fever. It's like so hot here, I can't handle it.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing? Fever.
Exactly.
What a weird name.
Oh, it's a beautiful and fascinating system. It's a reader that you pay $30 for. It's not free. You put it on your own server, and then there are a number of different categories. The bulk of the feeds that you subscribe to go into a category called Kindling, and then you designate certain feeds as Sparks. So in our case, we use certain high-profile link blogs or some of our competitors or things like that as Sparks. And then there's a hot view. And when one of the Sparks touches the items in the Kindling feed, then it shows up in the hot view. So it's like and the more Sparks.
You serious? This is for real?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great. It's like a personalized version of TechMeme. You know,
I get it. Now I define the criteria.
The Sparks are your criteria for what's high profile, and when one of your high profile sources also intersects with
just ask the obvious question. Can you like say everything from Mike Arrington automatically appears at the top of the list? Because then you really got TechMeme nailed.
Now.
I'm sorry. In your case, it probably would be Marshall Kirkpatrick, right? It sounds great. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm making light of it, but that's my job here, you know. I mean, but I think it sounds great. Why haven't I heard more about this?
I don't know. It's who designed it? It's a guy named is it Sean Inman? No, that maybe that's somebody else's name. One of the guys from Nine Rules. Let me look it up.
Well, we'll get it on the show notes for the show, and
it's Fever RSS.
Have you already written a review of it?
No, I don't. This is the first time I've spoken of it publicly, to be honest, and it'll probably be the last because it's hot stuff, and I live in a. I've got. Oh yeah, it is Sean Inman who built it. I don't like to talk about things like this publicly too much. Less.
Are you going to review it?
Use it.
Are you going to review it or not?
Probably not. No.
Really? Wow.
Maybe once we stop using it. You know,
so
I've
got
the.
You're using it internally at ReadWrite Web. Is that right? Okay. Well, you know what? I didn't tell you to talk about it. We started out talking about The Sopranos, if you recall. I mean, I hope that wasn't like a proprietary secret or anything.
Forget about it.
Hey, did you like the part where the guy's head ends up under the wheel of the SUV?
Oh,
that guy kind of deserved it, though, didn't he? You know.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys, I got Michael Gartenberg on the line here, and you know he's calling from Berlin, and you know that's in Germany, and he's like totally super jet lagged, and I'm gonna get him in here for like 10 minutes because he's there at some kind of conference learning about new, you know, tech products. I'm gonna get him in here, and then we're gonna kick him off so he can get some sleep before he's going on an airplane. Michael, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Dave. Hi, Marshall. How are you guys?
Hey, have you been listening to all this?
I have indeed.
Have you?
Great
you know,
conversation.
We were just talking about you, right?
You know, it's a little surreal because, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, segueing from The Sopranos into RSS, you know, you have to kind of wonder if you're.
The question is how many really times are you going to mention that? It's four a.m. where you are, which is in Berlin, Germany. And how are you feeling?
I'm doing good. It's been a fun show.
What show are you at?
So this is IFA. IFA is kind of like the European version of CES. It's Press Week and Analyst Week. It's a pretty monster. Lots of press conferences. Sony kind of had the kickoff slot. They kind of get that Microsoft, you know, night before everyone goes, they go first. And then today everyone else went. So Samsung, Philips, you know, the whole range. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
What did they show you?
So two big trends, right? 3D TV sets and connected TV sets were the big rage. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting the way the companies were showing stuff off. You know, so Sony had this, you know, massive booth. I mean, you've been to CES, right? So you know the size of the booths. So those are about
Marshall,
a quarter
have you been
of
to CES?
I have never been to CES. No.
Okay.
It's sort of monstrous.
It's unbelievably huge. It's like the biggest show in the world or something.
So picture the Sony booth four times larger than it is at CES.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they were doing the press conference. So they had a great setup. You know, they had Stringer out there. They were doing these 3D demos. They handed out 3D glasses to the audience. They're showing PS3 games, you know, racing games in 3D. They're showing live soccer in 3D. It was pretty impressive. I mean, the ecosystem ain't there. Panasonic today was absolutely hysterical. They were trying to show off 3D without showing it off. Can you imagine like being in like CES in 1950 and someone talking about color TV and showing it to you on a black and white set and saying, now just imagine if this was in color.
it was hard to do that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was like seriously downright hysterical. And they kept showing these scenes like a boxing match and then like a photoshopping someone on their, you know, living room barking lounger in the middle of the ring. And at a certain point, it was definitely getting surreal. And then their big finale is, you know, Avatar is like this big hot movie, James Cameron, you know, going to be in 3D.
Right.
And they show the trailer on this giant screen in 2D. And it was sort of like, now just pretend you were seeing this in three dimension. So that was pretty amusing. And it's definitely a very culturally different show. There's Miss IFA, who is sort of like the spokesmodel. Imagine trying to have Miss CES. And like, you know, her picture's everywhere. You know, everywhere you go, there's this woman in a redheaded wig, Miss IFA. You know, and apparently what I've learned from like European tech bloggers is like that's your kind of link bait. You put up a picture of Miss IFA and you generate traffic.
When she works, she doesn't work for Sony or something.
No, she works for apparently, you know, the GFA is sort of the European equivalent of like, you know, our Consumer Electronics Association.
And what does her hair look like?
You have to check it out. She's wearing a red wig and a tight red dress. She's like a model.
So
she's been doing it for 10 years.
What? Miss?
And she, Miss IFA, IFA.
Is she campy or prurient? Or both?
It's kind of hard to tell, right? Because there's some real cultural differences here. You know,
it's kind of, well, she's got a great, you know, body. She's got red hair, though. Her hair actually it's not like red. You know how they say, like, she's a redhead and it's really, like, blonde? But her hair is really red.
Yeah, this is like wig red.
We were
kind of
German,
speculating
right?
How many wigs she has. Yeah, and like everywhere you go, like that, like you see her picture. Like she's posted over everything. So there's a lot of cultural differences and stuff that you won't see at a CES press conference. Like the Philips press conference was, you know, probably the moment when I was closest to losing it. It was the middle of the day. It was pouring rain here, and everything. Yeah. Unlike Vegas, you had to walk from one place to the other. So every time we walked outside, we're getting literally soaking wet. And we're walking into the Philips press conference, you're trailing puddles, you're sitting down, and they're starting to talk about coffee makers. that's their kickoff. Then they're going from there into toothbrushes. Then they're talking high-definition TV. And then to wrap it off, they're talking sex toys.
Well, that must be very interesting, though. I mean,
it was I mean, I got to give it credit because, you know, we're sitting there and I guess you kind of get that, you know, the 14-year-old American boy still inside of you, you know, giggling. And this guy's doing it like totally straight. And I'm going like, maybe there's just cultural differences or he spent a lot of time practicing this in front of a mirror. And they're taking it really seriously. And I was like, you know, these things you're just not going to see at, you know, CES in Vegas. So big
okay,
show,
cool
trends.
They do have sex toys at CES in Vegas.
Yeah, but they're kind of segmented, you know.
They are segmented. It's true. It's often like the Hilton or something, and they have all the porn stars in there and everything.
Yeah. This is not in the same. It's usually not in the same presentation as your, you know, high def displays, your coffee makers, your toothbrushes.
So what about the connected TVs? What's that? I mean, that's getting back to, you know, the subject of this podcast is tech. So.
Differentiation, man. Everyone's looking, you know, you can't build them big anymore, right? They're 150 inches. People can't, you know, where you're going to put them.
Right.
You can't make them higher resolution. You can't make them thinner. So the way to differentiate, one was 3D. And by the way, we got two competing standards, Sony and Panasonic, totally at odds with each other in terms of technology. So expect another format war in 2010. But connectivity, you know, it's,
so what does it mean when you say connectivity for a TV set? What does that mean?
So people are showing off different things. It seems a lot of it was YouTube everywhere. And that's kind of perplexing because do you really want to watch, you know, crappy low-resolution YouTube videos on
sure,
a 60-inch high-definition TV?
Yeah, of course you do. I mean, when I said I bought this house like 3 years ago, and I started from that basis that basically before I ever wired them up to, you know, cable TV or anything, they would be connected to computers, and of course those computers would be on the net. And right now there's like five TVs in the house, and only one of them is connected up to you know, DirecTV. That's it. And of course you want to watch everything. They're you know, they're internet devices basically, so they're, you know, anything you can get on the internet. Why not? Why wouldn't you?
Because it's blocky and kind of low resolution, and it doesn't look particularly good. But, you
well,
know,
look at it the other way, though, okay? Yeah. So let's. Why wouldn't you want to watch those videos in a comfortable den or living room with your family?
No, I agree with the concept. I'm just saying they're going to have to kick the quality. YouTube isn't it, but there's going to be other stuff in good quality.
No, I don't know. I can convince you. Come over to the house when you're in California. I'll show you what we do here.
You got it.
Yeah, no. I mean, you just flip it around. It, you know, I don't think people think about this the right way. That that computers, well, whatever. It's actually kind of hard to explain in words, but when you actually do it, it works. You wonder why you weren't always doing it that way. So my answer is you watch it. People will like that. People will like having YouTube. Even if the video quality isn't great, having the option to do it is fantastic. It's not the only thing you're going to watch, okay? But having to watch it is very good.
I'm a big believer in three screens and a cloud all coming together, but it's going to be content appropriate for each screen. But the one thing that I think you'll appreciate, and I think you kind of post on this today, was RSS on TV, and Samsung
yeah,
has shown
that
as part of their connectivity.
I got an email from Amazon today saying, would you like to buy a TV that does RSS? And I thought to myself, well, I already have one, but never mind that. I think it's kind of cool that you're asking me, you know.
Mass market. The problem with some of this stuff, though, is it's not mainstream. You know, the way they're defining connectivity is they're sticking an Ethernet jack on a TV set. And, you know, in most homes, the Ethernet cable to the router is anywhere but near the TV set. So they're going to have to refine that a little bit. Lots of local content deals, you know, in Europe, it's all going to be country specific, but we're going to see that in the U.S. And Sony was very big. All the stuff that they're doing on the PlayStation, you know, that they're on their PlayStation Network, movie rentals, you know, user-generated content, access to all their catalogs. They said they're putting that across on multiple devices. Mm-hmm. And what are the big trends here? Samsung was basically killing off the netbook, you know, one of the most popular netbook vendors, and they're pushing, you know, ultra-light machines, 14 inches, 8 to 10
they're
hours.
Killing their netbook?
Battery
is that what you said?
They were working really hard to discourage it. They, you know, they were showing they introduced a couple of new models. They said some
why?
Use cases.
Why do you suppose that is? Maybe they're not selling. Maybe their netbook isn't selling.
No, they're actually number one in Europe. You know what it is? It's profit margins, man. There's no money in them. They'd rather be selling something for $600 than something for $300.
Right.
Well, but they have some
how to make money at $300.
They had a really interesting stat that I thought was really fascinating, and they said there was a survey that was done in the U.S. 60% of consumers who bought netbooks mistakenly thought that they were getting a laptop.
Sounds like you have a call coming in there.
Yeah, I got like, you know, I think it's my wake-up call.
It's your wake-up call. I remember reading about that.
There you go. My bad hair day starting officially.
We should probably move on pretty soon, Michael, because we want to get to some other things here. And also
cool.
Get a chance to get ready for your cross-oceanic flight.
Yeah, I got to head back. But it was good chatting with you. Thank you for having me on there as a last-minute guest. And hopefully I'll catch up with you next week in San Francisco.
Well, I hope you can come to the RSS Cloud Meetup because you're going to be that day.
Yeah, I'm gonna ping you and ask you what the best way of getting there from Union Square is. Just point me in the right direction for New Yorker with a bad sense of direction.
Well, you come back to the show again soon, Michael.
All right, thank you, folks. Have a great rest of the evening there. We'll talk again soon. Have a good one now. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. Well, that was fun, huh? Getting a call.
Oh yeah.
You get a call from Germany, huh? Yeah.
Nope.
So tell me about augmented reality.
Well, Michael's report from the IFA conference sure did make me think about augmented reality. It's true, and it's been a month full of augmented reality for me. Augmented reality is a term that people are using for a set of technologies that displays data sets on top of our view of our physical surroundings. There's a number of different ways that that's being implemented. Some people are using projectors. Some people are using glasses. But the hottest and most accessible form of augmented reality right now is coming in mobile handsets, phones, Google Android and iPhone 3GS. Android is wide open to augmented reality apps right now. The iPhone 3GS has had a couple sneak in, three that we know of, and official support for augmented reality implementations is expected sometime this fall. So, for example, there's a real neat Yelp app there's an Easter egg that snuck through the iPhone process, and Scoble discovered it somehow, where if you've got an iPhone 3GS and you have to shake it three times to get to the secret Easter egg, but then it gives you an option to turn on an augmented reality view where you can look through your iPhone's camera at your surroundings, and little pop-up windows will show up if you're looking in the direction of a business that has a review on Yelp.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can click that little window and it'll show the review. So in theory, someday we'll be able to walk down the street or be, you know, coming off of a subway. Well, coming off the subway you could probably do now. My fantasy is to be able to point my phone at a building and say, what is that building and what have people said about it in the past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an obvious thing that the world turns into a discussion group. Yeah, where you can put a post-it note on any piece of geography you want to. Right?
Yep, there's a wonderful service called Wikitude that comes out of Europe and is a wiki augmented reality view where people, there's a real simple web-based interface at wikitude.me where you just click on a Google map and annotate points of interest, and then instantly anyone who's looking around through their Wikitude app on the Android phone sees those points of interest pop up when they look at the location that's been annotated online.
So you're using an Android phone now, right?
Yep, just got it yesterday.
So what's the deal? How much does it cost you?
Well, I decided to get a one-year contract with T-Mobile, so I paid $300 for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to use voice very minimally. I've just got it really to test apps,
mm-hmm.
But of course, just getting a data plan isn't an option. But with the minimal voice plan, unlimited data, and a small monthly insurance fee plus taxes, I'm paying $65 a month for the phone.
Interesting. So what's it like?
Oh, it's great.
I mean, you have an iPhone, right? You also have an iPhone, so.
Yep, I've been using the iPhone for about a year. And you know what they say about Macs, that it's a very tightly held together, very smooth experience. And the same can be said about the iPhone versus the Android, I think. Mm-hmm. The Android is much more open, and it feels that way. And sometimes, in some ways, that's good, and in some ways, it's a little less pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's super customizable. The App Store is wide open, even though it's smaller. And I'm impressed. I like it. I'm having a lot of fun with it so far.
So does it do Wi-Fi?
Yep, Wi-Fi, 3G, and Edge.
And I have this. A couple of years ago, I wrote up a description of what I thought was the perfect podcast player, and it had been a long time since I took it out, and I put it on the agenda for this, bad hair day, and took a look at it, thinking, well, none of these things would be met, and then I realized that in the last 2 years, actually, we're getting kind of close. Let's see, let me get it up here, because I want to apply this to your Android phone here at first.
Mm-hmm.
But first I want to talk about it relative to the iPhone. And so here are the three features that matter. That it be self-contained, untethered synchronization, much the same way a BlackBerry gets email. So at the time I had a BlackBerry, and BlackBerry email is actually, a really good prototype for a podcatcher. The things it's downloading are small, they're email messages, but the same idea could easily apply to MP3 files. So the idea is that you don't need to, the thing that makes the podcast experience complicated with an iPhone is the fact that the iPhone, because this time the iPhone, at this point in time, the iPhone didn't exist. This is like 6 months before the iPhone came out. And the iPod didn't have the ability to communicate, so the only way to get an MP3 on there was to run the aggregator on your desktop or laptop computer and somehow get the music or get the podcasts onto the iPod. And so the idea was that the iPod itself would be able to do the communication. Well, of course, an iPhone can do that, right? Now, the question is there a decent enough podcatcher on the iPhone? And my guess is there probably isn't, because I seem to remember that Apple was keeping them off the market because they said it competed with their way of doing things.
There's a real – that was what turned the key in my mind, was fantasizing as well about my dream MP3 player and podcatcher for MP3 blogs in particular. And I thought about how great, to have the Hype Machine type application on my iPhone, and I realized Apple would probably never approve anything like that.
Yeah, they've actually turned them down, so you're not aware of it. But the question is, does Android have that? And
I haven't begun to look yet.
It would be worth finding out if they do. And so let me go on to the second one. I felt that every device should be read-write. Like the early personal computers were like this. It was, if you got an Apple II or an IBM PC, you could write software for the Apple II or the IBM PC on the computer itself. And while most users didn't do that, it was very, very important that the barrier to entry was so low that any motivated user could learn how to make software for it and make software every bit as good as what the commercial guys could make. And that, I think, has been taken care of on the iPhone. There are many apps, including the one people seem to like the most is called Audio Boo. I know Blog Talk Radio is working on one. There probably are any number of different apps. It comes bundled with one, the iPhone does. Now, does Android have a way of recording an MP3 file on it?
I'm sure that it does, yeah. It's got a video recorder and real simple publishing of video and photos. So.
But can you get an RSS feed out of that, I guess, is the question. Because in order to be a podcaster, it's got to be able to do that. So that's something else to look at. And the third thing is, and this is one that where the iPhone and iPod completely don't make it, where Android totally does, is that it must be a platform. And that is that the people other than the manufacturer can add apps. And I know that I'm going to get a lot of flame mail for this, but the iPhone doesn't qualify because if it has to make it through the manufacturer's approval process and that is anything other than totally liberal, then it's no longer an open platform. It's basically a sponsored platform and not an open platform. But Android,
oh, for sure.
Yeah. I'm getting ready for the flames. I'm sort of girding myself against it.
Well, the question is, what is the end result? Or one of the questions is, what's the end result for users? You know, I'm real curious to see how well this open Android platform works for me as a user. I know there's no Pandora app. There's no Facebook app. And I've had a hard time so far finding a good Twitter app.
In the apps. I mean, if after being open for X numbers of years, there aren't apps on that machine that you could never get for an iPhone, then there's no point in having it be open, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like if tree falls in the forest, you know that story, right?
Well, so far, the augmented reality stuff falls into that category. Can't get it for the iPhone, and it's going real strong in
on
Android.
Why do they call it augmented reality? Don't you think it's like a little grandiose to call it that? I mean, I guess there's no other phrase for it, right? But it just seems ridiculous. I mean, no?
Oh, it's less ridiculous than some other terms. I think Bruce Sterling, the sci-fi writer, gave a keynote at the grand opening of Layer, the Amsterdam-based market leader in this space, and he said, look, let's just call it augmented reality. Let's just keep calling it that. It's literal. People can understand what it means, and it doesn't sound nearly as silly as phrases like air tagging.
I like air tagging. That sounds more creative. I like that a lot. Let's change it. I'm calling it air tagging. No, I'm not.
Less precocious?
Well, it sounds...
Less pretentious.
Yeah, I mean, well, augmented reality overstates the case. I mean, it's not what...
Oh, wait till you see one of the apps. Then you'll really say
it
overstates
the case. I have
seen it.
I have. I saw the screenshots of the Yelp app. And I think it's great. I think it's really, really cool. And I can give the rap on it, and I've told people all about it, you know. And I will describe it enthusiastically because I think it's great. But I also think sometimes the tech world gets carried away with itself and might try a little bit of understatement every once in a while as opposed to, you know, these grandiose things. Because it isn't augmented reality. That's crazy. Augmented reality is LSD, you know. That's augmented reality. You've probably never
you
done
go.
LSD, would be my guess.
Well, I tell you, I will say one thing publicly right now, and that's this is something I was thinking about today while I was walking home. I am going to...
Did you hear that? We have 90 seconds left. Can you believe how time flies?
Reality is augmented.
Yeah, our reality. Yes, I just...
I'm going to dedicate 5 hours of my life over the next several months to annotating the map of Portland, Oregon on Wikitude, so that our local area has got some augmentation. Because right now it's too sparse. I've added a couple of my favorite restaurants in the coffee shop I was at today, and it was so easy to do. And if everybody did that, and then if they become the open platform, standardize that data like a good wiki would, then we're really rocking.
Before you, how do you do this? What do you have to do? Because I want to do this in Berkeley too.
Oh, it's great. You go to wikitude.me. Then you can sign in with any OpenID account or your Twitter or Facebook, Google, you know, whatever. And then you just click on the map, on the Google map, and it pops up some fields that says what's the name of this place, what's the description, and is there a link for it? And you hit save, and
Okay, we're going to do Berkeley. That's going to be an inberkeley.com project. And I just want to close the show out with, I'm glad you're doing that, because I thought you were going to say you're going to spend the next 5 months dropping acid, and that wouldn't be a good idea. I started to say, I bet you haven't done it. I regret having ever done it myself. So there you go. That's it. We're done. Marshall?
Dave, it's been a pleasure.
I know.
Hold on,
we're off
your hair
now, so.
Are we? Are we able to continue speaking? And
oh yeah, we could keep talking, and anybody that's listening live will hear us. But
oh, they will.
Yeah. Now you could really misbehave if you wanted to. This could be like the true insiders click here, you know.
Oh, to some degree. I said my mother calls me up sometimes and strikes up conversations based on my tweets. So
my mother follows my tweets too. I hate to say. Well, actually, it's. That's not, I don't hate to say it. She's a good lady.
Yeah, it's charming. It's charming. But I guess someday people will say that Facebook is where I publish things that I don't want my family to see.
Mm.
Won't there be some irony to that?
Well, we should talk about that next week and talk about Scoble losing his blog, too.
Losing his blog?
Yeah. Would you remind me? Oh, you won't be here next week. Maybe I can get Scoble to be on next week. So,
what? Scoble lost his blog?
I know, but this is stupid. We're like wasting good content here.
Depends on we're serving the hardcore discipline.
Yeah.
We need to get chat going, probably. Don't you think?
Yes. Yeah.
We're
totally
gonna be live.
That. Yeah. I would also. One of the reasons why I wanted Gartenberg in here this week, because I wanted the idea of being a little bit more casual about getting guests in, sort of like to say to people, you know, in the last hour or two, you know, just, you know, here's the number,
uh-huh.
Call in when you want, just let me know what your number is so that I know to turn you on,
uh-huh.
You know.
If you happen to be a world famous technology analyst or the creator of the world's leading open source browser and one of the hottest pre iPhone apps of the
You're talking about
social network in the
Ben,
world,
right?
Yeah, then call on it. Yeah.
Well, we know all those kind of people. Are you kidding? You know, they're all out there. They're not hard to find. They're, you know, and they're some of them are pretty nice people. Most of them are.
I thought our show with Joe turned out just great, and I really that was a good one.
Yeah,
so speaking of which.
I
sure did. I made the very peak of tech meme, and not just my personal tech meme, but the real deal.
I want you to open up that personal tech meme of yours. I think that's very important that you do that.
Yeah, well, if it was for public consumption, it would be different, and not just for competitive reasons, but for more interesting reasons.
Yeah. Huh.
It's, you know, it actually, at this point, is not that hot list. Is just a stopgap measure to make sure I haven't missed anything there, and I get a lot more value out of the river of news, a different category in that same reader.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to have to check this out and see what he's got there.
Yeah,
I really do
yeah,
mean
check.
It. I mean, I, you know, I'm my stuff is free anyway. I'm not making any money off of it. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
My point, I like to get competition here. A lot, most of what I'm doing is, the whole point is to draw in competition. You know, you're dealing with a moribund market here, and I feel somewhat responsible for that. And so
have
I'm
you,
trying to restoke the fires a little bit.
Have you looked at Magpie RSS and SimplePie much or at all?
I'm sorry? What?
Are you familiar with, have you looked at Magpie RSS and SimplePie?
No.
They're free open source PHP RSS parsers.
I know, but I don't need RSS parsers. As I said, that's the easy part.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're also good for displaying them, displaying RSS feeds nicely on a page.
Well, I got that. I'm done. I got what I want. Let's put it that way. We, you know, to answer your question, yes, I've seen them because there are a lot of apps out there that are built on top of them.
Yeah.
But I would have a long argument with those guys about what's the right way to do this. I don't need to have that argument because I've already done it the way I want it to work. I mean, I do some things that probably some developers would say you shouldn't do, okay? Like, I'll tell you, for example, I do not do full items, okay? I first of all, I strip out all HTML from each item, and I truncate them at, I think it's like 250 characters. And that's how I get the effect that I want, which is I want to be able to easily skim with the scroll bar.
Yep.
And I don't want them to be able to throw ads in there or blinking shit or pictures or any of that. I just want their text. And then if I find something that I like, I'll click on the link and I'll go read your article and I'll see your ads and all the rest of that shit.
Yep.
You know,
Lazy Feed displays things in the same way.
Good. Then they're smart.
Yeah.
That's how RSS, excuse me, but that's how it was meant to be done. You know, that's how it should be done. And anything beyond that isn't working the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be easy to skim. But when,
for example,
openleft.org, right? So I did this thing called newsjunk.com, right? And we had an aggregator that we as a group of editors read, and we forwarded the items that we wanted. Well, openleft would take up 18 screens for each article. Yeah. Get it. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
I'm down with that. One item that I want to make sure to mention here is that speaking of last week's show, I don't know if you noticed, but the next version of the Facebook iPhone app just went live today.
Oh, really?
Yep, 3.2. We were talking on the show asking when are all these bug fixes going to happen, and I wonder if he snuck some more stuff in, too.
I bet he did. I bet they're all doing it now, huh? After the Yelp thing. I mean, you got to believe that they told Scoble about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because Scoble was just down there like 2 days before it leaked, right?
Yeah. Well, since this isn't being recorded and it's just live, I'll ask
I wouldn't
you.
Be sure about that, by the way. Okay? So don't say anything that you don't want. I'm just warning you, okay?
That's very kind of you.
Okay, now go ahead.
Did you see that that crybaby blog post on TechCrunch the next day about, it was a guest post from an iPhone developer. I can't remember. Who was it? Oh, I think
boy, was that pussy.
Well, it's hard not to. All right.
I didn't get those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. I'm going to be camping next week, and I'm going to miss the show. So I hope nothing exciting happens on the internet between the next 2 weeks.
I think we'll get by just fine. We'll all be doing acid while you're up there camping out.
There you go. I don't know if that'll make the internet more or less interesting.
Would it be fun? I say that if you got rid of all the RSS, the news would stop flowing. Well, if you got rid of all the acid, I think the news would still flow. But it'd be a lot more interesting.
Oh, with or without? Oh, I think there's some kindred spirit elements there.
Only with acid would me and Steve Gilmore ever get along. the bridges are completely burned there, but with acid we probably would be just fine. Anyway, I will never do it again, so you don't need to worry about that, Marshall. That's all behind me.
Right on.
I know you spend a lot of time worrying about me, so that's one thing you don't need to do. Worry about
it. I try not to worry about you too much, Dave.
No, I don't think you should. Anyway, I think it was a good show, and
yeah, I think so too. I'd love to get more feedback from listeners, but I really like it when we spend time just the two of us. I mean, I love having guests on too.
Yeah.
I think Michael was great, but I really like a mix of both.
Well, I think not to belabor it, but it takes a while to get a rapport going. If you go listen to number 10 of rebooting the news, you'll see that's when things really started to click. And Tenet was a great one. I think this one will go down as a great one. Absolutely. And, you know, so, you know, it'll get better and better. I don't think it matters whether we have a guest or not. I don't think that's the issue. I think it just takes time to develop the flow of it. That's basically what's going on. And you need to have some interesting people, and I think, you know, you're very good and, you know, interesting guy, and that thing you did with Fever there is you proved that you'll be take the foolish risk every once in a while, too, which is kind of nice, you know?
Yep, foolish risks make for good podcasts, I hear.
Absolutely. And you know nobody was listening to it anyway, so what the hell difference does it make?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I came across an article, and not to be too obnoxious about this, but I came across an article a couple of weeks ago with Mark Hopkins, the former Mashable editor. Did you see this? Doing an interview about some such. And one of the things he mentioned was, he said, way back in the day, I used to be the only person at Mashable, he says, that had a Twitter account. And nobody took Twitter very seriously. But then I read an article by Marshall Kirkpatrick about how he was breaking news with the help of Twitter. And now fast forward years later, or you know, months later, and Mashable is absolutely kicking our asses vis-a-vis Twitter.
They're kicking your ass? Is that what's going on?
In terms of Twitter traction and resulting page views.
Well, because they had a head start with you on the suggested users list, I think.
That's definitely a factor as well.
Yeah, you got to remember that. I mean, they have an order of magnitude more followers. Although you guys are going to catch up pretty soon.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can sleep at night though, but you're going to catch up.
Hey, I ain't on the suggested users list.
All right. Keep dreaming.
Yeah.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Sounds great, Dave.
All right, bye.
Okay, take care, bye-bye.